If you're here on the smokeless gunpowder bill, we're not going to be have time to take this today. We'll take it on Wednesday. We're going to have time for, because Senator Anderson has called an important meeting for around 2 o'clock. I think what we'll do is we'll adopt the delete everything. We'll take testimony, depending on how that goes, we may or may not have the ability to take a vote on this. I apologize. Session ran late, and then Congressman Peterson was speaking to some senators immediately after that. So that took up more time than we took up the time we were hoping to spend on this bill. So why don't we take Senate File 1137. We'll go through the delete all. There's some, I think everyone who's kind of who wants to comment on it is here. So we'll just, we'll just make the salient points. Maybe we need another day to work out some of these details. We were going to be working at this. This has kind of been a work in progress anyway. We do need to get this bill to state and local government. So let's just take the testimony, feel out the comfort of the committee, and then we'll either lay it over or move it out to state and local government, at which time we will continue to be working on the bill anyway. But we'll just determine the comfort level of the committee at that time.
Committee, we turn our attention to Senate File 1137. Senator Chaudhry.
This is not an author's amendment anyway. This is not an author's amendment. I don't think we have a quorum anyway. We do have a quorum now.
Let the record show that we now have a quorum.
So we will go through the delete everything amendment. There are significant changes, some significant scale backs from the original bill. So if members have concerns about particular portions of the bill, do look out for those provisions. Why don't I have Ms. Brimmer come up and walk through the changes?
Not yet. Senator Chaudhry, would you like to move the A5 amendment?
Why don't we go through it first?
Okay.
So members know what's in it.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Jeanette Brimmer. I am the legal director with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. Thank you for the opportunity to appear in front of you again today on wetlands. What I would like to do is we have handed out an amendments bill summary, although there's even changes to that as we work through this because the Supreme Court acted last Thursday. So I will go through the summary with the members just to make sure that everyone understands the delete-all provisions. The intent is to come up with a single wetlands bill. We have worked very hard with Bowser and many other interested parties, and basically what you will be seeing in front of you with the delete-all is most of the provisions, most if not all of the provisions of the Bowser bill, some of the provisions we've been working on and some that we kind of hammered out with a number of interested parties, for example, agricultural interests, some of the local government, some of the northern forestry interests. So without further delay, let's go through the bill. On your summary, you can forget Section 1 on your summary because that no longer exists because of actions by the Supreme Court. As of last Thursday afternoon, they took care of that issue. So there's no sense trying to change law now on something that the Supreme Court did, which basically the Supreme Court said, if you have a pending permit application in front of local government makes its decision within the 60-day time frame. Yes, they should send you a written notice of that, but if you don't get that written notice within the 60-day time frame, it does not automatically grant you a permit. And that case was the Hans Hagen Homes versus City of Minnetrista. So that's why there's been that change. Moving on now, Section 1, then, of the delete all that is in front of you also applies to the so-called 60-day rule. Some work with respect to wetlands is very technical, particularly wetland delineation work requires that it be done at certain times of year so that the experts can get out there and take a look at soils and hydrology and things like that. That's often work that cannot be done in a tight 60-day time frame. Similar work often has to be done with respect to a replacement plan approval. So those two technical things are taken out of the 60-day rule just while they are being done, and then the 60-day rule can start to run. And that's to give county governments and other technical people adequate time to complete that work. Section 2. My summary is messed up, so let me go back to the delete all here to make sure that that's correct. Section 2 concerns deed restrictions, and there is also a change with respect to stormwater ponds. This is something that Bowser has suggested, and we agree is very good policy with respect to wetlands. It's to make sure that the exemptions, the integrity of the exemptions are preserved. The deed restriction helps preserve the integrity of the agricultural exemption, and that is the purpose of that particular provision in the delete all. Also, the delete all has a requirement in the Section 2 with respect to stormwater ponds, saying that stormwater ponds, such as the kind that are concrete lined or that are just stuck next to a roadway that are only for water treatment, should not get credit for wetland replacement. But if it is a real wetland with real functions and values, then Bowser can give wetland credit for that kind of a wetland that might be part of a larger stormwater system. Section 3 addresses wetland replacement siting. This grows out of some work that's being done in northern and northeastern Minnesota. Concerns that in that part of the state where they still have 80% or more of their wetlands intact, there are some restraints or limitations and difficulties with respect to finding places to restore wetlands if you are going to impact them. A group of government and citizen folks, and including our organization, has been working on that issue. They are moving forward on an inventory of restoration opportunities, and these provisions now set forth separate requirements depending on where you are in the state for how you go about finding restoration opportunities. And it does give some flexibility if projects in the northeast part of the state are having difficulty finding restoration opportunities. It does allow some flexibility in that regard. Moving on, section, I think we're up to four at this point. Section 4 is the agricultural exemption. And what we are doing there in this provision is ensuring that.
I don't know if I'm tracking.
You're not tracking?
I apologize.
That's okay. I'm on page 7, section 4, agricultural activities.
Ms. Bremer, and,
yes.
And just to the committee, if you're on the summary sheet, you're off by a few numbers.
I understand that, and I apologize.
So the committee can catch up here, too.
That's right.
She is now taking us to Section 6 on your summary sheet. So if you will number that number 4 and then make the appropriate changes as we move from there, I think everybody will be on the somewhat same page.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I will try to give bill page numbers. That should help as well so that you can follow along on the bill itself. So I am on page 7 of the bill, Section 4, Agricultural Activities. This has been worked on, as I said, with Bowser and with a number of the agricultural interested parties. The intent here is to preserve the agricultural exemption as it is used on the landscape, but to streamline and simplify the exemption language in the statute currently. Currently, the statute has a lot of reference to federal programs, some of which are no longer in existence. That's an ongoing problem, and so what this does is simply provide that normal farming activities, planting, harvesting, things like that, that have been done for a long time and have been exempt for a long time under the law, will remain exempt, but this makes it easier to apply and no longer ties it to outdated federal programs. Moving to...
worked out with it. Agriculture.
That's right. As Senator Chaudhry pointed out, we were in discussions with Department of Agriculture, various farm groups we've been discussing this with, such as Farm Bureau, Farmers Union, really trying to make sure that everyone understands that the intent is not really to change the substance of how this works, but to make the exemption simpler and easier to apply. On pages 8 and 9 of the bill... Section 5 on your summary sheet, it's called Section 7. This is the drainage exemption. This applies existing provisions and allows basically a drainage exemption if you have been able to farm a wetland for 8 of the last 10 years. You can really view it as a bit of a companion to the agricultural exemption. Again, if you've been engaged in normal farming activities for 8 of the last 10 years in that wetland, then there are some provisions for exempting that activity under the drainage exemption. Also, there are some changes there where we are deleting an obsolete provision that is no longer applicable or used under the agricultural exemption. That discussion came out of the stakeholder group meetings. And has some language that allows some preserving, again, the integrity of the drainage exemption. It does not allow the use to be converted so that someone else could kind of sneak in and take advantage of an ag drainage exemption after the fact. So there are some changes there as well. Moving to the next section, this is on page 10 of your bill, Section 6. On your summary, it would have been listed as Section 8, the federal approvals exemption. Again, this is really bringing this provision in the law up to date and is basically exempting activities if you already have a permit from various federal authorities that also have jurisdiction over the wetlands. This should streamline this provision for users and makes it simpler and more clear to apply. Also on page 10 of your actual bill, moving into 11, Section 7 on your summary, it would be Section 9. This is language that, again, grew out of the stakeholder process this summer and fall. It does not change the substance of the utilities exemption. It, again, is a simplifying and clarifying amendment that makes that exemption easier for Bowser and utilities to apply. Moving to page 12 of your bill, Section 8, listed as Section 10 under your summary. This is changes to the de minimis exemption. The de minimis exemption is an exemption that allows project proponents or landowners to make some small impacts to wetlands without having to comply with the replacement provisions of the Wetland Conservation Act. These de minimis exemptions on page 12 of your bill are being reduced in certain respects and in certain parts of the state. Members will note that the 10,000 square foot exemption for the northern parts of the state remains the same. That is unchanged. In other parts of the state,
Mr. Chair,
from current law is changed.
That's
from,
correct.
Changed
from current law. Thank
changed
you.
Changed from the bill.
Question, Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Brimmer, and when we talk about the greater than 80% pre-settlement, what counties are those?
Senator Saxhog, Mr. Chairman, you're going to test my knowledge. It's primarily in the northeast and northern parts of the state. I think that, members of Bowser could probably better. But St. Louis, Cook, Itasca, Kuching, I think Aiken is part of that. I think you get a pretty broad swath through that part of the state.
Thank you.
Continue.
Thank you. Yes, and as Senator Chaudhry points out, this leaving it at 10,000 is different from Senator Chaudhry's original bill, but the same as current law. There's been a little bit of back and forth. I want to make sure that we're very clear on that. In other parts of the state, you will see that there is some reduction in the de minimis provisions. We've talked a long time and a lot about this, and those reductions grew out of the stakeholder process that Bowser did at the request of the governor. We went through that stakeholder process throughout the course of the summer and into the fall, ending with a roundtable in St. Cloud. And at the conclusion of all of that input and all of that discussion, Bowser did have suggestions, as did some of the environmental organizations and others, to reduce some of these de minimis exemptions. It was Bowser's understanding that some of the wetland loss that may be occurring was by the use of this de minimis exemption, and that some reductions of that exemption would be appropriate. What you see for a couple of those is cutting them in half. For others, in particularly sensitive areas, the shoreland zone in particular is the one that gets down fairly small, but that's because the shoreland wetlands have been identified as some of our most sensitive, most important wetlands for protecting habitat and water quality. On page 13, also as part of Section 9, page 13 of your bill, you will see that there is some rulemaking authority for Bowser to address application and implementation of exemptions and provide for estimates and reporting of wetland impacts. As this committee is aware, there has been some struggle with understanding exactly what is happening on the landscape in terms of numbers. There has been some desire to have reporting. Bowser has said that's the kind of detailed thing that if we're going to do it, we need to do it in rulemaking, not in statute. And that strikes us as a positive development and a good way to go, that then everybody can have their say. We can really hammer some of those things out. Please note that there are specific exemptions to be reported. It does not include reporting on the ag exemption. That would not, under this provision, have to be included in the Bowser rulemaking. It's primarily geared to things like the de minimis exemption and a few others that Bowser feels that it needs some additional information on, and we would support that.
Did you notice that it's an ag wetland and it's in the shoreland?
Section 10... which deals with, if you're looking at the top of page 14 of your bill, and it would have been section 12 on your summary sheet. This is some changes to the language with respect to Bowser doing a wetland delineator certification program and allows them to set that program up and allows them the authority to continue to work on that in a way that they feel is going to be more practical for them to apply. Section 11 on page 14 of your bill, section 12 of your summary, excuse me, section 13 of your summary, appeals of local government staff decisions. This is, again, addressing some of those time constraints, the 60-day rule. What Bowser is finding is that there will be an appeal of a local government decision on, like, day 59 well, then it's very difficult to resolve that appeal within the 60-day period. So what this does, it says if there's an appeal, then we have 30 days to resolve that appeal. And just because someone appealed a decision very late in the game, we don't want that appeal to kind of be automatically decided on us. So this gives some appropriate time to resolve the appeal. On page 15 of your bill, there also is some fee collection allowed relative to appeals. Appeals at Bowser have increased significantly in the recent past. It is costing them a lot in terms of staff time, and this allows some minimal fee recapture for Bowser so that they can help fund the costs that they are experiencing as a result of those increased appeals.
Is that part of the Bowser bill?
That was part of the Bowser bill, yes, that was. Let me make sure I'm keeping up here. Section 15 is simply a conforming amendment to other things that we are that are happening in the bill relative to the exemptions. Excuse me, Section 14. Section 15 on page 17 of your bill. This is where we... we'll have to probably make a change, but I want to discuss this with the board. Originally, Senator Chaudhry's bill did have some citizen enforcement provisions that mirror those in the Clean Water Act. After significant discussions with Bowser and others that are interested in this, in the House bill, it was determined that that citizen enforcement would be taken out. And it would be replaced with administrative penalty enforcement authority for Bowser local governments and DNR when they are enforcing the Wetland Conservation Act. And that is not in the delete all in front of you. That's, I believe, a glitch in the drafting. And we're hoping that we can discuss that at Senator Chaudhry's. I think that's all about the administrative penalty order. That we would support a change like that. I think that that is probably a lot more workable. It keeps the enforcement and the authority to do proper enforcement with the government agencies. I think giving them that authority, which other agencies have for their laws, is a reasonable approach, and we would definitely support that approach.
Question, Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Chaudhry, would you then entertain an amendment to delete Section 16, or?
I think Carol is drafting the administrative penalty stuff. To
Senator Scogin, Mr. Chair, Senator Scogin, we're drafting a replacement amendment, so we'll take care of that.
Okay. Continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we are up to, let me make sure I'm keeping on track. Section 17, page 18 of your bill.
Rulemaking.
This allows Bowser to do exempt rulemaking within a short period of time. You might refer to it as emergency rulemaking in order to see that a lot of the things in this bill are carried out. And Bowser has indicated that this would last for a limited 2-year period, at which time it would be replaced by more permanent rules. Once Bowser has the ability to go through the full rulemaking process, which of course often includes hearings and a lot of stakeholder groups, that takes a little bit of time. But they want to make sure that they get to rulemaking early so that they can have some of the good things in this implemented. Section 18, which is page 18 and 19 of the bill before you, is appropriations. These are the appropriations necessary to make some of these things happen in this bill. If we're going to do rulemaking, that costs some money. These are in the governor's budget. It also ensures that there are funds to local governments because, of course, local governments play a significant role in administering and enforcing the Wetland Conservation Act, and we want to make sure that they have adequate expertise and authority to do that. Finally, Section 19 is a repealer of the so-called approved development exemption, which was kind of a grandfathering provision in the original Wetland Conservation Act. If you already had your permits and everything to go forward with your development In 1991, you were given an exemption. At this point, as part of the stakeholder process, it was determined by Bowser and others that this was no longer needed, that people who had their permits back in 1990, 91 have probably already gone forward or let those permits lapse. And so this is a cleanup amendment, if you will. And finally, Section 20 is the effective date for the bills. Thank you. I'll answer any questions, and I apologize that this is a work in progress and a little hard to get through.
Thank you, Ms. Brimmer. Questions for Ms. Brimmer? Senator Stumpf, you look like you have one.
Oh, boy, do I ever. thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I'd like to actually go right back to the beginning of why you think it's needed, but, you know, I think, you know, we've probably discussed some of those issues before. But I do think the whole wetlands issue is much more involved than what I think most of us around the table or in the room probably realize. And the intricacies of what you're proposing here. To give you one example, you know, I think you talked a little bit about farming and farming, the normal farming practices, and that's obviously quite a big change. Nobody can quite define what farming practices is or normal farming practices, but one change that I remember that took an enormous amount of time back when we did this in the 80s was on Section 5, where you talk about the purposes of this subdivision, which it relates to public drainage, and one that we had talked. I mean, we had, I think as long as I can remember, we had the longest running conference committee that has ever happened in the state of Minnesota. It was over 2 years, or right around 2 years, that a conference committee kept going. And the reason I mention it is that because the intricacies of land and water and people's rights are all very important. What you're doing here, if I understand this correctly, you're stating that if someone, if wetlands drained under this subdivision are converted to uses prohibited under paragraph B and clause 2 during the 10-year period following the drainage, the wetlands must be replaced according to or section 103G.222.
That's page 9, committee, if you're looking for it.
Mm-hmm. So then what you have, if I understand it correctly, you would have to go back and readjust for the wetlands during that period, that 10-year period. And I think the striking of the language, which would mean that you could not, let's say, put a house on that land, or if you did put a house on that land, it would have to be on 40 acres, no more than one house per 40 acres. You'd have a number of restrictions and expenses put on that property that I'm not sure the public really would buy into it. I mean, maybe you would, but I'm not sure everybody else does.
Ms. Brimmer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stumpf, if you look at page 9 of your bill, the language that the senator referenced that is being deleted is, in fact, recaptured further up in the section near the top of that page. There's an adjustment to make it more clear about paragraph B, clause 2. But the goal of this, from in fact Bowser's bill, was to actually preserve the integrity. In other words, if someone comes in and is claiming an agricultural exemption, the original intent of this language was that they get that, and that's what it's for. But the ag exemption is not for some urban sprawl, maybe to kind of slide in under the wire after someone has legitimately used an agricultural exemption and then take advantage of it, something that they might not otherwise be entitled to under the Wetland Act. In other words, preserving the intent of the exemptions for what they were originally. And so that's what that is. And there are a couple of places in the Wetland Act where we do things like that. Originally were done like that. And in this instance, it's made more clear, a little more precise, and moved up in the language.
Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, you're right. Comments are right. And we're not changing current law. We're just moving that language up a little bit in the bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and maybe I could have counsel just clarify what changes from current law this impact would have.
Do you want me to do that?
Mr. Knopf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stump, what it does is, if you look at the where it's placed in current law on 9.19 to 9.21, it only applies to paragraph B. These are lands that had been assessed drainage benefits but had not been drained. This was, as Senator Stump may recall, this was kind of the final piece in 1996 that sealed the deal. And what it was meant to do was to apply to those lands. What this does now, by moving it and applying it to the entire subdivision, it would also apply more broadly, I think, as Ms. Brimmer was pointing out, including the repair and maintenance of existing drainage systems. So where you're just going in to repair an existing drainage system and wetlands are drained that have been in existence for less than 25 years, you would then have to go back and replace those if you built more than one house on 40 acres on that property within 10 years after the drainage. So it does apply it more broadly to the entire subdivision, whereas before it only applied to paragraph B, which is that limited group, and I think most of it's in northwestern Minnesota where this land had been assessed but had not been drained prior to the act being passed.
Senator Stumpf, does that line up with what you were thinking it was doing?
Well, it'd be, Mr. Chairman, it would be interesting to hear from some of our, like maybe the watershed districts or some of the farm groups on this. But I do think that I wouldn't want to mislead members and say that, oh, this is just a cleaning up of the statute and we're just trying to, remove some antiquated language. I think this is going to have a much more far-reaching impact than what people realize.
Well, if there aren't any other questions on the explanation of what the amendment is doing, why don't we move to the testimony?
Okay. With that, we'll move to thank you, Ms. Brimmer.
And thank you
we'll
for the opportunity.
Move to, do you have a preference, Senator Chaudhry?
Why don't we just go down the list? I do also have Keith Carlson who wants to testify, and we're going to have to keep it at about 5 minutes per person.
I'll watch the clock for you. Dave Wirens, Board of Water and Soil Resources. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Dave Wirens, Land and Water Section Manager with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'll keep my remarks brief this afternoon, as I've been before the committee on two separate occasions to discuss this issue, both initially the Wetland Conservation Act assessment we undertook over the past year, as well as a review of the legislation we had drafted and introduced by Senator Chaudhry to implement those particular changes. I would concur with the presentation of Jeanette Brimmer, as she did a run through of both describing the changes, well, some of their impacts on the ground. The primary purposes we are trying to move forward with as part of this legislation and in cooperating with, again, the full range of groups, farm groups, conservation, environment, local government, state agency, they have all been part of the process that led to the legislation that is largely incorporated within Senate File 1137. The primary purposes, again, are to reduce the net loss we would identify under the Wetland Conservation Act. It is to improve the simplicity and the regulatory simplification that is always a goal, and to also have a limited impact on landowners and local governments. And we think those goals are being achieved through this legislation. On behalf of the Board of Wildlife and Soil Resources, I would encourage the committee to support Senate File 1137. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Questions for Mr. Wyrens. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Tom Tree, St. Louis County. Welcome, Mr. Tree. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Tom Tree. I'm the Environmental Project Manager for St. Louis County Public Works Department in Duluth, Minnesota, and I appreciate your time. We would like to briefly just discuss, I think I had a handout, Senator Saxhog, the summary mitigation.
We'll get that passed around the table.
Okay. Jeanette brought up a... our large group in northeastern Minnesota who's been working on a wetland strategy to find more wetland mitigation opportunity for everyone in the greater than 80% counties. The counties from Lake of the Woods to Cook County down to Isanti County over to Hubbard County, 16 counties. And once you get the handout, I can refer to it a little bit easier.
Go ahead, Mr. Tree.
Okay, thank you, sir. I can summarize the first page. Basically, what the first page tells you is that looking for wetland mitigation opportunities in northeastern Minnesota is like looking for a needle in a haystack. There's approximately 70 acres of wetland banking acres available in northeastern Minnesota, and we have an annual demand of approximately 500 acres, so we're not meeting that demand. And this affects transportation, it affects mining, it affects economic development, affects everybody. Even churches and schools are having a hard time finding mitigation when they have additions to their properties. So second side of the page, there's a list of all the participating groups, the various counties that were involved, companies, members of the state agencies, DNR, PCA, and Bowser. And MCA was also a part of this group. And we came up with recommendations on the strategy. And the first two that I would like you to look at are the Northeast Minnesota Wetland Inventory, which we estimated to be about $225,000 to do. And what this would do is identify potential wetland mitigation opportunities. It would... Bowser would be the lead on this, and they would set up a contract to identify where potential mitigation could take place. And the second thing I wanted to point out was the siting analysis. Once we have the potential sites located, we would need to grind out the details and make the sites practical. Oftentimes when we find potential opportunities, things don't work out for whatever reason. If you're restoring hydrology, you may end up flooding people, and we don't want to do that. So we want to work out those details. So with that, you asked Senator Saxhog.
Senator Saxhog.
Mr. Chair, in line with Mr. Tree's testimony, I'd like to offer the A6 amendment.
Committee, you have the A6 amendment coming before you. This is in line with the Northeast Wetland Mitigation Inventory and the Regional Mitigation Siting Analysis in Section C and D with fiscal estimates of $225,000 and $150,000. Senator Saxog has moved the amendment. Questions? Senator Chaudhry.
Second. Just got to read it. Mr. Chair, Senator Saxog, does this increase the appropriation or does it earmark the current appropriation?
Senator Saxog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Chaudhry, I defer to Mr. Tree on that question.
It increases.
Chairman, Senator Chaudhry, this is not in Bowser's budget. It arrived too late to be involved in their budget, so it would be an increase in addition to
the second.
Sir.
Just for clarification, we have not adopted the delete all yet, so for Senator Saxog to make an amendment to that, is that appropriate?
Still can.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, problem supporting wetland mitigation siting analysis for northeastern Minnesota. It's fine with me. It's just a question of where we will ultimately get the money. But I have no problem in this committee as a matter of policy stating that we would like to fund that.
Other questions? All those to the A6 amendment before you, say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
Builds on.
Thank you, Mr. Tree. Jerry Botzek, Minnesota Conservation Federation. I appreciate the testifiers watching the clock. We're moving right along.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gary Botzek, Minnesota Conservation Federation, and I can be brief. I wanted to say to Senator Stump, but he's left the room, that we're just beginning to forget that two-year conference committee, and he brought it back up. So this is a very difficult issue, and we appreciate the work that's gone in by the chairman on this side of the table, as well as all the groups. This is very important, not only to for clean water, including drinking water, water retention, flood control. It's important to ducks. It's important to other wildlife as well. Whether you're a hunter or a bird watcher, this is important legislation. This is a very important issue as it relates to the general public. We've done a lot of polling in the last couple of years for clean water, and wetlands and clean water are synonymous in the 80% plus 90%, you know, protect, do more. But we realize it has to be a balance, because it does have impact on development, and developers and realtors are involved and interested. Farming community, ag community is well represented, and part of this compromise and this equation have been since 1991 and need to be. It's very important to property rights. We all respect and honor property rights, need to. But it's also very important to the environment and conservation as well, looking for that fourth leg to the stool. Senator Pogenmiller talks about three legs on a different bill, but I want to talk about four. Let's keep the balance for environment, natural resources, conservation in this bill. The stratas that we have in the law are very important. The plus 80% counties, you've heard about that today, and you'll hear more. 50 to 80% counties like Anoka County and others, very different situation. That makes the WACA, or the Wetlands Conservation Act, a living, dynamic document. I don't believe this will be the last time or the last year we visit or revisit this law. But we need to move forward, and these are reasonable compromises, we think, in the right direction. The only thing I would offer as kind of a sidebar to Senator Anderson, we heard the first time this bill was presented, actually Bowser's study, I believe, a lady from DNR sat here and talked about the DNR flyovers that they conducted in 24 counties, identifying close to 500 impacts in those counties, resulting in close to 100 violations that were pursued. We would hope that you would find money to buy Bowser a plane or two so they could enforce this law, or at least work with DNR to get out there and see what's going on and stop some of these things before they get too far out of hand and out of line. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'll stop and take any questions.
Questions for Mr. Botzek. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, sir.
John Waller from Hugo.
Mr. Chairman, I have some handouts. Who do I present them to?
Excuse me, sir?
Someone will come up and
handouts here for the members, please.
She's coming.
Senator, I haven't met you before.
Mr. Waller, as with the others, we're on a pretty strict clock today, so we'll give you about 5 minutes.
I'll try to talk fast, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and thank you, members. My name is John Waller. I'm from Hugo, Minnesota, 14010 Homestead Avenue. I'm here representing my family farm. I'm here as a citizen today, and I'm here to tell you that I think that Sections 4 and 5 changes in this bill are unnecessary, and that they're... I'm going to talk to you a little bit. First of all, I've sent out some handouts. I think the first handout you're going to see is a map. I want to show you a map of that, and it has Waller Farm on it. You'll see on the right side of the map that Waller Farm doesn't have any encroachment by any lake, but you'll see on the left side that it does. And this is the result of culverts being put into a judicial ditch at an incorrect height some 30 years ago. Now, we've worked very diligently for the last 20 years to lower these culverts down and to lower that water back. And then we had the Department of Natural Resources use the Public Waters Act to go into a public ditch and take away our drainage by installing, with a watershed district, a weir structure, a dam in there, to reflood us again. Now, the second one that you had a handout, this much smaller, members, Mr. Chairman, you'll see that this is a timeline. And this demonstrates our pre-existing drainage property right on Waller Farm. See that? It says judicial ditch number 2 in Washington County is on the extreme left, and then we're up here on the right. We went through all the processes that you have to go through. We went to the courthouse and got the appellate court and Judge Foley to tell us what the rules were. And we had a repair. We had minor maintenance. We didn't even have a full repair. We got our culverts lowered, and our property right is pre-existing of the 1992 Wetlands Act. It pre-exists the 1955 Watershed District Act. It pre-exists the 1937 Public Waters Act. It pre-exists the 1925 creation of the Conservation Department itself. That used to be incidentally called the Department of Drainage in this state.
Thank you.
It was its purpose.
And our ditch rights come from 1909. Now, our pre-existing drainage property right is very important to us, and we want to maintain that. And that's why I feel the Sections 4 and 5 in your bill are just unnecessary and would be, in my opinion, overextensive legislation, if not maybe even militant in some of them. Now, I'd like to show you what happened and why we got started here. I brought a few pieces of wood off the farm. On our farm, we consider wood a crop. Now, when I testified in the House committee, a fellow came up afterwards from the environmental side, and he says, those were nice props. And I said, no, sir, they're crops, C-R-O-P-S. We look at food, fiber, and fuel production as part of our farm. We've been there for some 50 years. This is a piece of tamarack, Mr. Chairman. 17 miles for the members to know where Hugo is. It's all the way here. This is 19 inches in diameter. This was killed about 25 years ago when the Department of Natural Resources authorized a virgin culvert to go in a public ditch 5 to 6 feet too high. Funny how you see those same people that are involved in the record, you read their names, and then you look around and you see them year after year and still here.
This is a piece of basswood, Mr. Chair.
That's a biggie.
This is 32 inches in diameter, and when it was drowned, water came up,
it died.
We had over 9,000 feet of board timber we could salvage on the farm. We left a lot of it laying dead. We have a certified forester that came in and told us about the damage to the farm. I want you to know that this piece of basswood, when you go down the hall here and you take a look in the House of Representatives, and you see that speaker's chair, and you look up there and see the portrait of Mr. Lincoln. When Mr. Lincoln was president of the United States, this tree was alive until the DNR and the Rice Creek Watershed District drowned it. So I would also point out to you that our farm is in the Agricultural Preserve Act. Now, in the Metro District, that's 474H. I think that's number 40 out in the outside. You are changing the definition of normal farming practices. That's brand new language. Suddenly, drainage isn't normal farming practice anymore. Under our preserve, we are allowed to use our wetlands, our forest lands, our pasture lands.
an agricultural use of normal farming practices. Now, over here in the G section of the Public Waters Act, you're going to change what the definition of a normal farming practice is not to include drainage, and that would result in our lands being flooded down there, our pasture lands. The places where 40 years ago, my father, when I was 10 years old, went out and put the railroad tie posts in, and they're still there today. Only they're not 4 to 5 feet out of the water, because there wasn't any water in those days. They're now, some of them are almost underwater. So I'd ask you to talk about what drainage is. I brought another demonstration here of a tile. This is a drainage tile. This is what a drainage tile does. A drainage tile lowers the water level so that the crop can seed, and that the roots grow low enough down to where the water is. It has a hole in it, both ends. And that allows so that later in the year, in August, in July, when we're in the dry section, that the root structure, the agronomy of that plant, has grown enough so it doesn't fall over because it isn't shallow. That's what we do in these type 1s and 2 wetlands. And I'm asking you, are you saying that since drainage isn't a normal farming practice, that we're now going to make drainage tiles not formal, normal farming practices anymore? Because that's what this is, a drainage tile. I think when I looked at your list of people that were up at St. Cloud, there's a couple of groups I noticed that were missing on that when you sat down. I didn't see the agronomy section from the University of Minnesota Ag School here. You know, there's a Dr. Drainage over there down at Waseca that's working on some of these projects. And this drainage system is very, very important to the state of Minnesota. It's what built this state. When you walk around this building that we're in here today, you'll see on the walls and on the murals references to agriculture. Agriculture worked in this state because we had drainage. And drainage needs to be maintained. It needs to be repaired. And it's one of the cheapest things that we ever spend money on because it isn't repaired as often as a highway. It isn't repaired as often. Our drainage ditch wasn't repaired for 70-some years. And then we only did half a repair to get it back. But we need to make a decision, Mr. Chairman, on what's vital to us. Food, fiber, and fuel production and agriculture, which is on the state symbol, or that hunter-gatherer recreational mentality that's riding away over the fence that's on the state symbol. And our state symbol shows you that. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Questions for Mr. Waller? Thank you for your testimony. Mary Mueller, Wetlands for Minnesota.
I sent it to you in the mail.
I'll give you an extra copy, Senator.
When you wouldn't meet with me.
Ms. Mueller, welcome. Do you have a handout as well?
It's written copies of my testimony.
Okay. We'll get that passed out. And while they're doing that, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senators. My name is Mary Mueller, and I am here today representing Wetlands for Minnesota. And we are a newly formed association, and we were formed to represent the small businesses which restore wetlands for compensatory mitigation. So we're the small businesses that are providing for the replacement wetlands when wetland impacts are allowed. We were formed in part to advocate for really good quality replacement when wetland impacts are allowed. We feel that the success of the Wetland Conservation Act, the ecological success, can partly be measured in how well we are able to replace wetlands. Of course, it should always be preserved first, but if it's allowed, we are looking for rules and statutes that allow us to do really quality work. Our association is by and large supportive of the bill that's before you. We're particularly supportive of language which limits the use of ponds that were created for stormwater management requirements and limits their use as contemporary mitigation. Ponds that are addressed in this rule or in this statute change, which is being limited, are the part that is required to be on the landscape for pollution mitigation, non-point source mitigation. They don't function very well as wetlands as they receive stormwater, and the hydrology is unstable, and there's too much sediment and other inputs for these ponds to act as true wetlands. Bowser Wetland Report does not address how often these ponds are actually used for replacement. As part of a wetland credit sale, we as wetland bank owners are asked to fill out a form that shows how much impact took place and how much impact is being replaced on our with our wetland banks. And during the past 2 years, I've conducted kind of an informal survey of the clients utilizing our bank, found that about 30% of the replacement that they were required to perform was actually the stormwater ponds, the part of the stormwater pond addressed in the statute. So it would be a very significant improvement to quality restoration if that were no longer allowed. I'd also like to point out that this bill changes the siting for compensatory mitigation somewhat. Part of that change is replacement in the metropolitan area would need to be achieved in the metropolitan area at least one-to-one. And we're supportive of this change, but one of the things we would like to point out is this is a pretty big change in how wetland restoration credits can be sold. I'd like you to understand that when we put a replacement wetland on the landscape, it's a quite expensive and risky venture. We take productive lands and we change its productive capacity. It costs a lot to do that, especially to do it well. And then we put an easement on that land to make sure that it stays in wetlands. And the only way we have of recuperating that cost is to sell those credits. And we could, if we lose the ability to sell those credits because people aren't impacting wetlands anymore or because another private wetland restoration bank is in our area and it changes the competition, we can live with that risk. But if it's because a rule changes, that makes it really too risky to put these high-quality restored wetlands on the landscape. And the legislation does not bring forth a grandfather clause for those banks in the watersheds of the metropolitan area that have already been developed. And as president of the association, I have asked Mr. Jaski to consider a clause, a grandfather clause. He has indicated that precedence does exist for such a clause, and I'm just bringing it up as an issue that we are hopeful will be put into place to honor the commitment made to these small businesses who are restoring wetlands for this law.
Ms. Mueller, we're about to our five-minute limit here. Okay. Can you quickly summarize for me?
Sure, I would like to just one last point is we are supportive of the wetlands inventory for Northeast Minnesota. You can go ahead and read our testimony at your leisure. But I would also like to state that another part of the strategy for Northeast Minnesota is a siting document that would allow for some of the wetland compensatory mitigation to allow outside the Northeast. And when that is allowed, we would ask that it would be done at a higher ratio so that there is some incentive to actually replace in this highly environmentally sensitive part of the state. And there are also some exploration of alternatives to wetland restoration as replacement in this area, and we would ask that these alternatives be ecologically evaluated as to how they compare to real restorations so that the statute can achieve its goals of no net loss in quality and quantity of wetlands. And the last point you can read at your leisure. Thank you,
Ms. Mueller. Questions? Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to, maybe this is for council. Is the replacement rate in the metropolitan area, is it one-to-one or?
Mr. Knopf. Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, it's one-to-one within the metropolitan area that you have to replace. You can go outside in certain areas. You can go outside for the second. It's two-to-one, but you have to replace at least one-to-one of the replacement in the metropolitan area. Is the way it works. And I think that's for transportation projects only. I'd have to look that up, but that sounds right.
Other questions? Thank you, Ms. Mueller. Keith Carlson also wanted a moment in front of the committee, so I'll call on Keith. Welcome, Mr. Carlson. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm executive director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association, whose members consist of 13 of the larger counties in the state of Minnesota. The committee has already heard from a number of representative of counties about the broader concerns with this legislation and whether or not there's a need to make substantial changes in WACA at this time. Our organization does share those concerns, but I will focus on just two what I believe are technical issues and then two substantive issues that I don't think have been addressed with any degree of significance to date. The first of those relates to the provision in Section 1 changing the 60-day rule when a wetlands delineation is required. I believe the intent of this language is to extend the duration of the 60 days, but the way it could be read literally is that it could actually potentially shorten the 60 days. Right now, before the 60 days starts running under the general law, we have to have received a completed application. Under the new paragraph E on lines 125 through 130, there's no such requirement. It basically says once the delineation is completed, and it basically, I think, it anticipates that a completed application has been received, but it does not, in fact, literally say that, the 60 days begins to run. So we could be in a situation where we've received a zoning request, a building permit request, and we tell them, You've got property involved with wetlands. Go take care of this first. And then if you enact this provision as it's stated right now, we would only have 60 days from the completion of the delineation, even though we have not received an application at that point.
Question, Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, Mr. Carlson contacted me about this, and I've also talked with Mr. Johnson from the League of Minnesota Cities, and I have a suggested short amendment, if you're willing to entertain that at this point.
Let's hear it at this time.
Mr. Chairman, on page 1, line 28, after the number 2, I would move to insert, for an application deemed complete under this section. And after they receive that application, the local unit of government has 15 days, I believe, to act. So that would be the starting point for when that 60 days run. Mr. Carlson, is that...
Mr. Chairman, Senator Frederickson, that would be satisfactory to us.
Committee has heard the proposed amendment. Questions on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Continue.
Mr. Chairman, then going on, our second concern, again, hopefully of a technical nature, relates to the stormwater management language on lines 3.15 through 3.7. Right now, the language says that ponds created primarily to fulfill stormwater management and water quality treatments are precluded from satisfying the replacement requirements. We've been told by testifiers, by the board, that this will not, in fact, preclude stormwater management systems, whether tertiary or secondary ponds, but the language really doesn't say that. It just says if you created it for stormwater management, it doesn't qualify, period. So I would ask the committee to consider some clarification. I do not have immediate suggested language at this point.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Chaudhry, I saw this section also, and I also on page 16, lines 18 to 23, that section, it says not up on clause, starting clause C, there's some notwithstanding, and then it says are eligible for replacement credit, and then lists water quality treatment ponds constructed to pre-treat stormwater runoff. And just that reading it here at the committee table, it looks to me like that section is in contradiction to the section on page 3.
Mr. Chair, Senator Frederickson, Not sure if you recall, in the first presentation of my bill, I had introduced an amendment that dealt with Mr. Carlson's concerns here. We are adopting a version of the House delete all that did not. And so it's my intent to bring that back. However, as Mr. Carlson said, we don't have the right language yet that would allow for the types of things that they're working for. I'm working on that, and I will be amending this portion. I just don't have the exact correct language now.
Thank you, Senator Chaudhry. Mr. Carlson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate the author and committee's consideration on that last issue. Our next concern, then, is a substantive one, and that's Section 16, starting on page 17. We have substantial concerns about the citizens' enforcement provisions, primarily because we could be assessed cost, including attorney's fees, under this provision. I understand that there's possibly replacement language being considered for this, and would highly recommend that the committee look at something different than this has the mechanism to enforce greater compliance with the law.
Senator Chaudhry, are you aware of his concerns?
Mr. Chair, I had the 8-7 amendment to address those concerns.
All right, we'll pass out the A7 amendment.
I'll move the A7.
Senator Chaudhry,
this is the replacement language that we talked about a little earlier and what Mr. Carlson is referring to now.
Senator Chaudhry has moved the A7 amendment. We have people on the right side of the table who haven't seen it yet, so we're going to give them just a second to look that over.
It's Section 16. What section?
Mr. Carlson, does this help you put this bill in order?
Mr. Chairman, this addresses our particular concerns in this area.
You see the amendment committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no.
Mr. Chair, then, if I can conclude, then, our last substantive concern then relates to Section 17. What has not been shared with this committee to date is the board's plans for rulemaking, and the rulemaking that they are planning is substantial. They will be increasing the replacement ratios for various wetlands. They will be changing significantly what wetlands or types of wildlands qualify for replacement. And from that point of view, although we were parties to the task force that work on this, we think that more work is needed on this, and thus it's not appropriate to impose these rules under the emergency rulemaking, but rather should be done under the normal rulemaking procedure where there's opportunity for input at the ALJ level so that all the parties can bring to bear their concerns and their issues before those rules are adopted.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Chaudhry,
it's up to the committee on this issue. My feeling is that this section goes to the legislative auditor's report on the type of authority that Bowser has versus the type of authority that Bowser needs to implement WACA, to implement Clean Water Legacy. And so I think this, from my point of view, this section is appropriate.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to make sure. Are we talking about Section 17?
Mm-hmm. Senator Pearsall, yes, we are.
All right, thank you. So,
Senator Pearsall.
I was trying to recall what the alternative was here that Mr. Carlson suggested.
Mr. Carlson?
This would have to be restated in different terms then.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, basically, from our organization's point of view, and I think most local governments share this, we believe that this should go through the normal rulemaking procedures, where concerned parties have opportunity to submit both written and oral testimony on the proposed rules, and the ALJ is then able to offer a recommendation on that rule. This basically says that for 2 years, the Board of Water and Soil Conservation has total fiat in determining what those rules are, and then will revisit the issue 2 years later after those emergency rules have already been in place for 2 years. We think the normal process will suffice and give the input that we think is deserving, again, of what are very, very substantial changes that the committee has not seen. Again, increases in the replacement ratios, basically reduction of what qualifies for the replacement credit or those properties, that will add substantial expense to anybody who has an impact on wetlands, including transportation projects, which we, along with the state and cities and townships, are obviously responsible for.
Senator Paraso.
Mr. Chairman, I'm glad that he repeated that. I'm sorry that we made you go over it twice, Mr. Carlson. But
it's kind of difficult.
But I don't know why an exemption should be in this particular section. I don't know if there's any compelling reason for an exemption there.
Senator Dill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I would ask the question, what is the big rush on the rulemaking? Why can't we take a longer time to do it and make sure we're doing it right?
Agree. Welcome. Identify yourself for the committee.
John Jasky, Director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Chairman and Senator Dill, this language is included in here. We've done this three times before when we made changes to the Wetland Conservation Act, and the reason it's in here, it's not intended to make any shortcuts. Certainly, the process that's described here, this exempt rulemaking authority, does have public notice procedures and input mechanisms to get those rules in shape. The reason we're proposing this is that the Wetland Conservation Act is administered by over 300 local government units, and they do that by using the rule. The rule has become a document that is inclusive of both the statute and the additional provisions in rulemaking, and we do that to get this thing in shape right away so they can implement these changes in the statute right away as soon as we can get them done in 60 days. As was noted, those rules can exist only for up to 2 years, and we begin a permanent rulemaking phase shortly after we get the exempt rulemaking effort completed.
Senator Dill.
So, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Jasky, then I gather then you're supporting Section 17 as is. Is that it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dill, I am. And in the past, our local governments have supported that as well as a way to get this started and be able to enact the statute changes quickly while we work on the permanent rule.
I believe Mr. Knopf has something to add to that as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just explaining to the chair that under current law, the board does have the ability to do this as long as there's no interpretation required. If you look at 14.388, the good cause exemption, it says if an agency for good cause finds that the rulemaking provisions of this chapter are unnecessary, impractical, or contrary to the public interest when adopting, amending, or repealing a rule 2. And number 3, clause number 3 on that says to incorporate specific changes set forth in applicable statutes when no interpretation of law is required. So the board does have the authority to go through a exempt rulemaking process just to incorporate the statutory changes. If you want to do more than that or where there's an interpretation required, then you would need something additional. But there is a general authority for agencies to do that.
So Section 17, if we're going to look at just general information, isn't needed?
Well, Mr. Right. Chairman, if it's only to make changes to reflect the law change, the statutory change, then no. But if you're going to go beyond that, and I thought I heard Mr. Carlson talk about that they were going to go beyond that.
Senator Chaudhry, is that where we're headed?
Mr. Chairman, I can speak to that. I'm just two things, I guess. One is that in the stakeholder process that Mr. Wirens described, we had committed to going forward with changes to the replacement ratios as part of the rulemaking process because it wasn't necessary to put it in the statute. The statute already prescribed the sideboards for that. And secondly, I guess I wasn't aware of what Mr. Knopf just described. We were mimicking exactly what had been done in the three times prior, which was to give us this authority to get this rule underway on a shoot. And I guess if there's another law that can accomplish the same thing, then that might be acceptable as well.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to add, I remember those three other times. And those times you did, there was some additional items that were included in the rulemaking that wasn't just to reflect the statutory changes. There were additional items that were also being included.
Mr. Chairman, again, I would just point out that that's the one specific thing that we had planned to do in the rulemaking was to deal with the replacement ratios for where the mitigation would be and the amount that would be required. And I guess one could interpret this one way or the other. We felt it would be helpful to have the direct authority here to go ahead and do that instead of wondering about whether it existed under the statute Mr. Knopf described.
Mr. Chair, I move to delete Section 17.
Senator Chaudhry moves to delete Section 17. Someone wanted to speak to that, apparently. We're about 15 minutes beyond our appointed time, so we'll just need to be brief.
Mr. Chairman, Ron Welcome. Harnick with the Red River Watershed Management Board. As long as the interpretation that Mr. Knopf made that allows Bowser to do the rule changes that are appropriate, then I think that's okay. If they're required to take 2 years to get them done, the discussion we had here the other day for allowing Northeastern folks to do their mitigation outside of the Northeast, which is what everybody thought could be able to happen, I think would be put off 2 years plus if we're not able to go through that kind of special rulemaking to make that apply.
Mr. Knopf on interpretation.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think this is really an interpretation. It basically just reading the language because it says incorporate specific changes set forth in applicable statutes when no interpretation of law is required. In other words, to make changes that exactly reflect. If you have to do any interpretation, no. And it also says that, these rules would be permanent. It says rules adopted, amended, or repealed under Clause 3 or 4 are effective upon publication in the State Register. So all you have to do is, the law's changed. Your rules need to be changed to reflect the law changes. They're effective upon publication in the State Register, as long as you don't have to make an interpretation in those rule changes, as long as the rule changes only incorporate specifically what was changed in the law for your rules to reflect that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I'll get that in the tape to verify that when we go through the process.
Right. My motion.
Thank you for the question. To the amendment. Removing Section 17. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Oh.
Carries.
I think Lisa Frenette from Builders Association wants to chat.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Lisa Frenette. I'm with the Builders Association Minnesota, and in time constraints, I promise I'll take under a minute. The Builders Association is opposed to a couple of the points or the provisions that are in the bill under the Delete All Amendment. The first one is under the first page, which discusses the delineation. Or wetland delineation. We're opposed to this. One of the reasons we're opposed to this is that last year we passed the 60-day rule, which effectively is really 120 days where an application for a wetland delineation or to move forward on a building project needs to be completed by tolling. What we feel this does is it tolls the statute and that the homeowner who's building a new home and the builder are, in effect, hanging in limbo because there's no timeline. The second part that we're opposed to is the stormwater credit provision, which is on the third page. Currently, builders put in a concrete stormwater pond. They're required to do so. We go one extra step and do secondary and tertiary wetlands to make it a true wetland, and we get a partial credit for wetland banking. We'd hate to see that disincentive taken away and just have a stormwater pond put in. Appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, as I mentioned before, I'm working on the
new language for that stormwater pond replacement credit concern, and I'm not going to remove that an incentive to create wetlands. So I'm going to fix that, and then I think we have a meeting to discuss this first section. May have some wiggle room there. Just don't have language now.
Any other questions for Ms. Furnett? Senator Shad, ready? Are you ready to move an amended?
Mr. Chair, I do have the A8. This is also kind of reflective of what passed the House and is more accurate of discussions that have been had on compromise on. This is page 12, line 11. We're amending. Take 10 seconds to describe this.
Ms. Brimmer, you're back at the table, I see.
I am, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. This amendment, the A8 that's before you, is because in our haste, working with Bowser and others on the bill that passed the House the other night, we simply made an error and had too extensive of a strikeout, and it was brought to our attention by DNR and some others. And so this is simply to correct the error. Otherwise, what happens is the de minimis sections sort of don't all fit together. I don't know if you want more detail than that, but this is just to get it to where it was intended to be when we made the changes with Bowser.
We'll find out. Committee, you're looking at the A8 amendment. Any questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Fredrickson.
Chairman, just a matter of drafting style, and this is in another section also. You list types listed in clauses 1, 2, 3. Why don't you just say the types that you want to which you want it to apply?
Ms. Brimmer?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, we were looking at that, but we kept with the clauses 1 to 3 language because that's an existing law. If you look at the bill and the de minimis, they already use that language. So rather than have to go back and correct the other ones as well, we just patterned it after the language that's in the law.
Chairman, Ms. Brimmer, it only occurs in one other place. That's in clause 4, lines 9.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fredrickson, correct, and I suppose we could change that one and list the types as well. That would accomplish the same thing. Yes.
Follow up, or
Chairman, I'll talk with Senator Chaudhry later.
Okay, Senator Chaudhry, we've got the amendment in front of us, committee. The A8 amendment. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
I'll then, Mr. Chair, move the
Senator Stumpf.
Oh, excuse me.
I have, Mr. Chairman, I have just a little short amendment that Senator Dill brought up. It's an issue that, and I don't have the amendment as such, but I think it's only a several word amendment to try to address this whole issue of replacement wetlands and the acknowledgement of replacement wetlands. I know, Senator Dill, you asked a number of questions previously, and maybe I could ask Senate Mr. Knopf to kind of point out where that would go.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf, it wouldn't be in the bill itself. It's a. And I apologize, I don't have it in front of me. It'd be 103A.201, and it would be to subdivision 2, paragraph B. Where it says achieve no net loss in the quantity, quality, and biological diversity of Minnesota's existing wetlands, to add after that, through the regulatory program in Chapter 103G and through wetland restoration in other areas of the state.
Okay. Maybe I won't offer the amendment, but I'll prepare it because I think it is important.
Senator Chaudhry?
Mr. Chair, Senator Stumpf, I think that's a good idea. About that with Senator Dill as well, and I think if we are going to count, try and count wetlands that are exempt, I think it's fair to count wetlands that we are adding. So, and I can work with you in doing that, or Senator Dill, or I think that's something I wanted to mention before we pass this out today. Is that that's something I want to address in this bill and do.
Senator Chaudhry, are you ready to move your delete all?
Move the A5.
As amended?
Will be A5 as amended.
The A5? Delete all. A5 as amended. Committee, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Mr. Chair, I move that Senate file 11.
Senator Bickerman.
Senator Chaudhry, when this bill leaves here, I'm going to have it in agriculture. I want it to come to my ag committee.
Mr. Chair.
I'm concerned with ag people.
Senator Chaudhry.
Chair, Senator. I'll kill your bill because I'm a co-author on your bill. I just want to make a little bit.
Mr.
Better.
Chair, Senator Bickerman, I plan for this to make a stop in your committee. Absolutely. Move that Senate file 1137 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on State and Local Government.
You have the motion before you, committee. All those in favor say aye.
Oh. Aye.
Just a second. Senator Chaudhry.
Before we vote, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out. This is why we're doing this bill. Jackson County. All of the red and pink here, restorable and existing wetlands. This is where we were. Now, we are never going to get back to where this is or the way we once were. Never going to do that. But I just want the committee to keep in context where we were once at and what we're trying to do. This bill does only a fraction of bringing back some of the ability to bring back some of these wetlands. And remember, these wetlands are not about ducks or just ducks. They are about where all of our rain goes. Rain doesn't go into these pink spots. They're going someplace else. And this past weekend, it went onto the streets and neighborhoods of Browns Valley. So, and that's going to cost the state and citizens of Minnesota a lot of money. So my bill doesn't prevent anyone, by and large, from draining a wetland. It doesn't prevent people from draining their wetlands. This bill is about the replacement of wetlands if they are drained. And that's the promise of the 1991 Wetland Conservation Act, that there would be no net loss of our wetlands. And so we're trying to rein in some of the leakage, so to speak, on no net loss of our wetlands. That's all we're trying to do. This isn't militant by a long shot. And even though we recodify some of the agricultural language, this doesn't touch drainage and filling. It doesn't. So we've worked very hard on this, and I'd really appreciate members' support. This is our fifth hearing, by the way, on wetlands. We started at the beginning with a lot of people kind of getting the back of their hair, the hair on the back of their neck standing up. My God, we're talking about wetlands again? I think we've come a long way. We've had a dialogue, and we're going to continue to have that dialogue. This is going to state and local government. It's going to the Ag Committee. So this bill ain't over either, but I think we've got a very good beginning.
The motion is to move 1130.
Mr. Chair, one more.
Senator Bickerman.
One more. I happen to know that area well. I've been there. I've walked it. And that's why I signed on the bill. I just want to make this bill better. I stuck my neck out a mile probably by being a co-author of this bill, but the end plan here is going to be the best for this state, but we need to get to that.
Motion is to move Senate File 1137 as amended and be recommended to pass and refer to the state and local government. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? This committee is adjourned.
Aren't we going to do the other bill? Did you do it?